Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of the Disc Golf Answer Man. I am Bobby Cool, that is Slick Breeze, and I have with me Eric Oakley.
Is that good?
Is that good? And it's been a long, long time. We totally appreciate your guys' abundance of patience. We appreciate it. Eric had a lot going on as far as obviously pro touring, disc golfing, and playing in tournaments and all kinds of stuff. And then Robert has all kinds of life stuff going on. In fact, he's not on tonight because he is solo parenting tonight with Owen. So he was unable to make it tonight. And then I just have a lot of stuff going on as well for my business and other things going on. So, but we are back here tonight and we're going to talk a little bit about Worlds. We just have a few questions, but we'll talk about these few questions here in a little bit. But let's kind of catch it. Worlds is really the big thing. The big thing mm-hmm. that we really should discuss. So now, interestingly enough, Worlds was took place at my old stomping ground, Emporia, Kansas. I did not even go, which was interesting because I still have my house there, but there was people staying there all week. So I would rather have made a little bit of extra cash than go down there. I kind of missed it, though, but it was nice to watch and see the people play the different courses. I haven't seen the changes that they made to the Jones Park or Jones Supreme, I should say.
And both then, had changes, actually.
Yeah, the Country Club had changes as well. So, mm-hmm. But I know that I'm sure that Dynamic just put on a good show. I know that there was some...
Yes, they do.
Yes, as they do. But I know there were some talks of the course changes and things like that. Still the same thing we hear over and over again, which was it's just a big hyzer fest. It did still feel like that, but that's just what you get in Emporia, yeah. Kansas. So, but tell us what it was like there, Eric. What was the whole event like, leading up to the event?
It was very different as from DDO to this, because we weren't dealing with extreme winds. Like, I think what we had at DDO was in the realm of like calling for postponing rounds type of wind. Mm-hmm. And I know people are at that level of like, well, everybody's got to play through. It's like, no, like it started to get to the point where I was watching people throw good shots and they were being punished for something that they really, really couldn't control. Where, you know, sometimes that you get unlucky bounces off of trees, but realistically you shouldn't have thrown it into said tree, or you hit a root as you're coming into ground and then it rolls your disc, like those types of things. That's unlucky that like you could have controlled slightly. You had some control over it, but when you're talking about these extreme winds, it's out of the question. So it was very interesting to see that, because it actually felt like you could go and attack and play the courses as what they were being asked for. What the course designer, you know, Eric wanted you to do was very much attainable and in reach. And I think it was very funny. I actually saw some locals making comments on different Facebook groups and different things like that. It's like, yeah, Eric McCabe designed one of the hardest courses on tour for all these pros. And, you know, now they just complained about it. And realistically, he didn't. He designed a adequate course for the area and for the event. He did a very good job with what he had. Like, let's be real. Jones isn't a property that is like, oh my God, this is primo for an elite disc golf course. No, it's just a really nice park that they happen to finagle a pretty good course. And I'd put it as, like, we'll put it as a good course, not pretty good. We'll just call it good. Because I feel like that's where Emporia Disc Golf will be. Emporia and DDO as an event and city are fantastic, bar none. Amazing. As the courses go, compared to a lot of other places, like take, for instance, where we are right now in Vermont, it is a step down from Brewster Ridge and Fox Run. And that's just how it is. But you're talking about what does Vermont have to offer and what does Kansas have to offer? The terrains are very different. And what like open plains compared to the Green Mountains is just like, you're just going to be able to do more up here in Vermont. So that I think is what I finally got to that point of thinking of like, yeah, Emporia is okay.
Yeah,
for disc golf as an event and as a city and everything, it's incredible for
right,
disc golf.
Right,
but the courses are okay for disc golf, and that's something that, you know, once you start to grasp that, you're not, you know, not caring about, oh, this is an elite level, when it actually is. Like, the courses were hard, and you had to throw really good shots, and you had to throw on a lot of holes, multiple shots in a row. And I think that that was a big part of what we saw. And we saw, you know, when you see players like Tristan Tanner and Aaron Gossage pushing up to the Henna Bloom, is because that is, and that's why well-rounded, that then the people that were strong enough for vision reach for that crew, Jackie Moe, just doing a really good job, because we didn't have any headlines about this Worlds. We didn't have a bought out driving range. Right. We didn't have a, oh, they drew OB lines in the middle. It's because, like, you knew Emporia and Dynamic Disc were an established event. And this is what needs to happen with Worlds going forward. We can't go to a place that hasn't had an established event, that hasn't worked through things, and the courses can't be different from, or at least the changes need to be very minor. And, you know, I do think outside of maybe one hole, which would have been hole 12 at Country Club, it was, that was the only one that changed, but probably didn't need to be changed, because it went from being a left to right moving shot sandwiched between two right to left moving shots. So two basically righty hyzers had a sandwich of a kind of lefty hyzer. And I played around with Chris Clemens, and he was just like, yeah, it kind of sucks that they took away this kind of lefty hyzer around that big tree as a whole, and made it basically a righty hyzer that Ezra Adderhold aced, which is incredible. It's really far. Amazing. But it was over OB the whole time. So like a lot of players like myself, I just threw it around where the old pin was and pitched one up and took a three and moved on to the next hole. So that would be the only one, only hole. Yeah. That I was like, I don't know if they did this right. So
I have to agree with you on being someone that worked for Dynamic Disc for quite some time and did a lot of the behind the scenes stuff. I would say I agree with you. The GBO, now DDO experience, the disc golf experience is what is excelled as far as Emporia, as far as the staff, as far as running an event, and as far as having a disc golf vacation type thing is great.
Amazing.
I can see now that as disc golf matures and grows and stuff like that, I can see how the disc golf courses aren't quite world championship level as far as testing the players. Although
Country
I
Club
think
is close.
They were Country tested. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not trying to. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to the extreme of saying, you know, it was so easy for all of them. I know it was a challenge and it was hard. And both Macbeth and Tatar obviously deserve that win that they got, but. I can see as other courses mature and as the sport matures, but you're right. The infrastructure that DD has to run an event puts them at that level.
100%. Yeah. You know, it's going to run without any hiccups.
Right.
The only thing that's have been hiccups in the past for a DDO or anything like that has been weather related.
Right.
Right. Like that hasn't been like, wow, they really dropped the ball and there was like no water on the course for players or something like that. Like that's never a thing that happens under DDO's watch or DD's watch. Like that's they run events well.
Let me ask you one question though. One question that I did see some scuttle, because I would say this is Worlds was the most that I watched live. Now I've watched other live events, but Worlds just because it was home, and then I was cheering for Kristen Tatar. I just would love to have seen wanted to see her win. And then I was curious to see if Macbeth could pull off the sixth time. And I wanted to see if Paige Pierce could pull off the sixth time as well. But once I saw, you know, it was kind of like between the two people I was kind of cheering for two different reasons, obviously. I did see, what are your thoughts? Give me your quick thoughts, not the Eric Oakley thoughts.
I know. Sorry. We haven't talked in a while, Bobby. I'm sorry.
Give me your quick thoughts, though, on hole 16 of the Country Club. And I think your opinion is going to be cut and dry. But as far as them painting the OB lines rather than letting the water be the OB line on the island, it was still hole 16, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you look at the DDO coverage, the line they drew was where the water was. If you look at DDO, the water was very up. It was the skip play was actually a lot more in play at DDO than it was at Worlds. So to me, I actually hit the front side of the island and then bounced and was OB. Mm. But what I appreciated the most was I walked up and knew I was immediately out of bounds.
Yeah,
I knew it wasn't a discussion or there was any gray area. I knew no card had any issue with making a call. So to me, we all had practiced it. We all knew that you needed to be on the top side of that crown because if you were underneath it, you were OB. Even if your disc was dry, I had two shots that were OB barely, but both dry, but they were OB. And I went to the drop zone, pitched up, took my four, moved on to the next hole. It made it easy to judge as players. Now, I know some people were watching and saying Aaron Goss got robbed, blah, blah, blah. To be honest with you, that is a bad take. It really is. He knew it out of his hand that he threw it short. Absolutely, he knew that. And he knew that that was the risk. If you're trying to park it, you might come up short.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I didn't. It was good. Yeah, had he made it onto the island, no one would have questioned the OB lines. No one would have questioned it. It never would have came up. But because he missed it, then it was like, wait a minute.
Hold on, he was dry. Right. I saw it.
So
I had somebody say that, like, oh, my disc was out on a rock in the water, completely dry. And I was like, was the rock surrounded by water? Did they say that the water was OB? Then you're out of bounds. Like, I don't care if your disc is dry. Like, that's when we get into these weird areas of, like, what was it, St. Jude, where Will Schusterick had, like, a one blade of grass under his disc. And then we get into this weird stuff that, where it just becomes, it's just stupid.
Yeah.
Like it is. I would much rather, of course, do what they did here was, this is the line. Make it inbounds.
Right. I figured that's what your opinion would be, but I was curious as a player. You know, me, obviously, I have my opinion. I agree. I think, to me, a designated line is much better than trying to figure out where the water was and the rise and, you know, the rise and fall of the water, or is it touching water? Is it, it's like a line helps it be more definitive. So, okay, good take on that. You agreed with me, so you get to stay on the show.
Yes. Go! It's on for another episode.
I have a lever right here. You didn't realize there's a drop floor beneath you. I was going to be like, or what was that? What's that show, that British talk show where they make you ask questions and the chair goes
flying? Edward Norton.
Yes, yes.
Not Edward Norton. Graham Norton.
Graham Norton. That's right.
Edward Norton.
So
he'd have a crazy talk show.
All right, let's get a few questions in real quick. And then it looks like Chase hooked it up. Who sent a speak pipe. So I'll grab that while you're answering some of these questions. So this one's from Brian. Hey guys, really appreciate the show. Had a league round today and two of our candidates were late. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Card mates were late. Luckily, we had a card of five and three people were ready at our tee time. So we waited 5 minutes and took off. Midway through playing hole two, one of the late card mates ran all the way over from the parking lot to express that he was upset that we left without him. His emotional energy unfortunately stuck with me for the whole round, and I played well below my skill level. What sort of technique and mental practice have y'all developed to mitigate the effects of nerves and tense motions? Seems like something that comes up on all skill levels. Thank you. Love you guys and this show.
Wow. I have played with people, and I will admit that I have been this person who has caused tensions on the card where, I've had my emotions, I wear them, but I am definitely a better person of that. But that's besides the point. What have I done when I've felt tested by others, or felt nervous? It's like, you have to start to distract your brain to get back into the disc golf and really kind of hone in on that. Like, I've played with players who are playing quite good and still complaining about every shot that they're throwing. And then I'm throwing and not complaining about my shots, but just getting absolutely housed by every kick, every skip doesn't work out. Everything is just, oh, cool. Every time I throw it good, oh, it just happens to scooch out into circle two or something like that, where they put it perfect in the fairway and then they had to like move a stick and they're just like, ugh, really? Like all this little tiny thing. So what I've done in those is just distract my brain, like just start to think about other things outside of disc golf. So whenever I come back to my shot, I haven't been thinking about all the things that they've been saying or all the things that they're doing. Now, if somebody comes up and is really mad at you guys for starting when they're late, that's just something. I mean, I know you as a person probably care about other people's emotions, especially at a fun league round. You're trying to make things good for everybody, but that's their fault. Like, I look at things like, we had a topic come up in the guys I play WoW with, and we started late, and he was like, look at this, like, we started late because this person didn't let us know they weren't going to be here, and we had to fill his slot. And all he had to do was say, hey, I can't be there, which he did later. But we ended up waiting. If you look at 10 minutes of being late for 24 people, that's 240 minutes of wasted time. If you put it all together, like that's a big deal. So in reality, these guys had wasted 45 minutes, 30 minutes of your time by all three of them not showing up on time. That seems that they are selfish and don't care about other people's times, or else they would have messaged you and or because they probably know you or know somebody to contact to, hey, we'll be there in 10 minutes. Can you wait for us? And that's a conversation that's easily had. So back to it. Communication's good. They were in the wrong and they wasted your time. You guys did nothing wrong. And if it's going to impact your play, don't play with them. Don't try not to get carded up with them. I guess is like the only advice I have going forward. But yeah, definitely distract your brain.
Distract your brain. And then the thing you have to know is, as with anything in life, no one can control the way you feel. They can't.
Love that.
You can't. No one can control the way you feel. So you've got to, and like a couple people said, be in your bubble. You have to be in your own space. Play your game, no matter whether you're doing really well or doing really poor, whether your card mates are the best card mates that are joking along and encouraging you, or the ones that get, you know, all pissy and throw fits. You are and that's one thing you're like, well, Bobby, that's on me though. Yes, it is on you. You are responsible for the way you feel. No one else is responsible for that. You have to take ownership and say, I'm not going to allow this person's attitude to cause me to feel or be emotional and cause it to wreck my game. Yeah. Now, the thing is that you have to practice that. This isn't something you can just say one time and then be good, right? So unfortunately, you have to practice this by being in those situations. So in this situation, take a look back. What happened? What went wrong in your mind, your feelings, your emotions? Learn how to correct it. And then somehow you're going to have to, be in those situations more. You're going to have to play more tournaments and have more card mates. Or you're going to have be in relationships. Or you're going to have friendships. Or you're going to have to deal with family and stuff like that to allow you to be more responsible for your own feelings so that you learn that skill that you can take in other places, such as the course. So, All right, next question comes.
Love it, Bobby.
Love it. Next question comes from Nando. In a recent tournament, I lost a lot of strokes because of my pride. Oh, another emotion. I would go low percentage shots and ended up OB or in hazards near the basket. How do you stay disciplined during rounds when things are not going your way? Also, are there any tips for when parts of your games like driving or putting are not working that day?
So I have a lot of on this just from Worlds. I did this for Worlds, but haven't really done this I did this in the past a long time ago, but I wrote down my game plan for the tournament on paper, what I was doing off the tee, and then anything about approaches and or the green that I should be looking for. So some holes like miss to the left side because you'll have even if you're 25 feet, it could be better than being 20 feet to the right because you might not have a putt on certain holes. And I was making notes of that in this notebook, and I would read that notebook when I was drinking my coffee in the morning of what course I was playing and go through those notes and make sure I understood. So that helped me keep to my game plan, as I had a good game plan for every single hole. I played 35 of 36 holes for birdie, hole 12 at Country Club being the only hole that I played for par because I didn't feel comfortable throwing over the OB. I could do it. I did it in practice, but it was just like, if I miss, I would rather not be re-throwing from where I'm at. I'd rather throw the shot that gets in bounds, pitch it up, take a three, and let's go to the next hole. So that's one part of it, is go in with a good game plan and stick to that game plan. In round three, I was playing really well. It was 10 down going into hole 18, and I took a triple bogey. And legitimately, three of those strokes were from bad approaches. One bad approach where I pulled it, hit the tree, went OB. And then another bad approach where I threw it again from not from a little bit closer up since it's not that far. And then I threw it to 25 rather than putting it really close on a pretty routine approach. So I was talking with my buddy Kyle New from Texas. He was just like, hey, just focus on your approaches. Tina also has always told this to me. It's like, when something's not feeling good, just work on it in your warm-up. Like anything you're thinking about, if you know that the day before this wasn't working, focus on that in your next warm-up session and really put a lot more focus into how you're throwing those shots. So if your driving or putting aren't working, that means, so if your putting's working and your driving isn't, so maybe spend only 10 minutes on putting before the round and take 30 to 40 minutes on really feeling out your drive. So for this, for me, it was approaches. So drives felt good, putts felt good. All I needed to do was fix my approaches. So I spent, you know, probably 15, 20 minutes in the field working on my sidearm approaches, working on my backhand approaches to make sure I was putting the disc close. And then that helped me, you know, end up, you know, finishing really well. My approaches for the remainder of the tournament, the last two rounds, both at Country Club, were dialed. And it was just that little extra focus that helped. So those are things that I would, you can do, not necessarily in real time, I guess, is like, you know, for him, if he's in the middle of the tournament and he feels like it's off, but just keep trusting that your next shot can be good. Just because you threw a bad shot, even if it was like, oh, it's a sidearm that I'm really good at, that doesn't mean your sidearm sucks. It just means that sidearm sucked.
Yeah.
It means this next one could be great. It could be the best sidearm you've ever thrown. You just have to give it that opportunity.
Reminds me a little bit of kind of what you said is like, you know, yes, if you're having a bad day, kind of take notes, but that's not the time to work on it, right? The time is to work on it before the event, before the tournament, working on during your warm-up if it's something that you need to make adjustments after a round if you're playing a long, you know, a long tournament round. But it kind of reminded me of a sermon I heard on Sunday, because what he said was a lot of people are willing to perform, right? Mm-hmm. They're willing to for the performance. They're willing to sign up for tournaments. They're willing to play the tournaments, right? They're willing to think about the tournaments. But are you willing to prepare? And that's where the work is, right? You not a lot of people are willing to put the preparation in. So the preparation is practicing. So the next time, if you're having a bad round, you're like, what is going on? I keep shanking it. Or what is going on? I keep putting too high. Make a note. Next time, then do the preparation of getting out there and seeing why you keep putting it too high. And that way, whenever things start happening, you can recall back to what you had practiced and make those adjustments that you like you made the adjustments in practice. So I thought that was so awesome when he said that. Most people are willing to for the performance. They're willing to perform and do the great things, but most people aren't willing to prepare. And I thought that was great.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go to the. This one's a quick one because he just has a question about if you played. Have you ever played a? He wants specifically ask Eric. Have you ever played a small course in Rogersville, Tennessee? I was a beginner playing there last November, and a pro joined me and didn't ask a name, but looks a lot like you.
Hmm.
I wonder if it was Drew or,
what?
Or Wait, Robert.
What's the city? What's the city? Let me look it up. Maybe I have.
Rogersville, Tennessee.
Man, was I in Tennessee last year?
You said last November. So yeah, practically a year ago.
Rogersville Municipal Park. I don't think so. But hey, I don't know if that was me. I don't think I've, no, because that's closer to where Zach and everybody is. So I don't think that was me because I don't know if I've been there. I can't remember, plot twist, it was Zach Melton.
that's good.
No, but I'm happy you did because I don't think a lot of, there are some pros that won't embrace that opportunity to just join up with people. Like you know, I had an opportunity to, I was at Marshall Street, right near, by MVP, or Maple Hill. And I look like a disc golfer when I'm there. I have all my disc golf, like attire and stuff. And he goes, do you work here? And I was like, I don't, but I can help you. So it's just like one of those cool opportunities. So that's really cool that he got to go play with a pro at just a local course, which is always big. So
that's cool.
Awesome.
All right, let's see what
family is Shay from Philly.
I was so good.
All right, let me
the games. I took a few friends out. They have my putting move was to check. Lost your putting video and one of it, like if they broke or something, what would you do? Would you grab two fresh, brand new putters of what you use? Or would you go to like your practice putting stack and grab some that are really beat up, but you know what they do? So just curious what you do in that situation. Thank you. And as always, keep it real.
That's an excellent question. Yeah.
I have had this happen where the day before the World Championships in Vermont, I had a dog chew up my putting putters.
Whoa.
I was on the course and we were swimming for a disc and a dog came running by and just my putters were lying next to the basket and he picked them up and gnarled them up. Sucked. I grabbed some old putters. You were real nice about it, weren't you?
You were real nice. You talked nice to the dog.
Well, I was nice to him and the dog. And I was like, me and the dog were homies. But after that, he just did me dirty. I was very frustrated after they had left. I was trying to be cool in the moment. But I was, Tina can recall of the moment being I was kind of being a real butthead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was really frustrated. Because I was really jiving with those putters. Like I was feeling really, really good about those putters in particular. So where I've gone to now is that I always bring four putters with me for practice rounds. And currently I have, the ones that I was putting with all season plus the two that I was using in practice. And then those two that I was using in practice quickly became the main putters for the last few events that I've been playing. And so I've took the ones I was using for the first part of the season and those have become like backups. That's whenever I go to do just putting practice, when I take 6 to 10 putters to a basket, those will now come back in the rotation. So those are kind of a backup. But I'm also using a brand new pair of alpacas. So I always am trying to cycle them in and I try and make four putts on every basket before I go to the next hole. So I'm starting to really feel out those putters. So I'm always about having another set of putters at the ready. So if you're playing practice rounds, bring extra putters. You'll start to feel it out. And now I know whenever I go and throw my next round or whatever, or if I have to, like I just like wasn't feeling my old putters, I would grab the ones that I was using in practice because I knew that they also were going in. I saw them go in practice. So that was huge. So that's been my biggest thing. It's kind of like about cycling your discs and having stuff at the ready. Like I've been cycling, an additional Pathfinder in my rounds, an additional Emperor and things like that. I've just been working those in my bag whenever I go play my practice rounds so I can see how these other discs fly. So I'm never feeling like, oh, this Pathfinder doesn't fly the same anymore. It's like, well, I have this other Pathfinder that flies great and I know how it flies and it's been doing good for me. So that's been my biggest part, is just cycling a lot more. Now if you don't have that luxury, cherish your putters. Protect them with your life. Keep them with you, sleep with them, don't let them out of your sight. That's all I got.
That's awesome.
That's all I got. And also, don't leave your putters.
All right. Last question we got from David is, if my plant foot is legally in contact with my lie when I release the disc, but after I release the disc, I rotate on the heel of my plant foot and this causes me to touch or move my mini marker, is this a stance violation? I hope I explained this well enough for you to answer. Basically, what I'm trying to ask is if I touch or move my mini marker with my foot after I've released the disc, but during the process of the follow through of my throw, is this a stance violation?
My interpretation of the rules is you have not committed a violation. But the problem with this rule and everything is how are we supposed to see in real time the disc release from your hand? And then that being before you touched your mini, and also vice versa. Like it could be you touch your mini and then release the disc, but it looks pretty close. So I have fallen under the rule or fallen under the guideline of my head of if I see it and I know it's a, and I see it as a blatant rules violation, I'm going to call it. But if it's close, benefit goes to the player.
Yeah.
Like I can't definitively say you committed a violation. And if I can't do that, then I'm not going to call it. My mouth will stay shut. I might say to the person, like, hey, you're really close to your mini on that one. Watch your feet. But I couldn't tell, but I just don't want you to commit a violation. So I might say something to them on the side because, again, if you're going to make a call, it needs to be without a doubt. You see it and it is 1000% a violation because with where we are in the rules, you as a person, Bobby, could go to a tournament and just call rules violations.
Yeah.
Just call them. And they might not even have violated it, but it would have been close. And you could say, yep, foot fault. Yep, you took 33 seconds. Violation, too long. You could do that. You could actually do that. Like, you can be that person. Everyone listening to this, do not be that person. Nobody will like you, and you're not helping the sport. You're doing actually worse for the sport. So what we have to do is keep working within the rules. And again, I really think it's just give the benefit to the player, let them know. And if it continues to happen and you blatantly see them make a violation, call it. And then inform them, this is what they did. Don't just be like, that's a foot fault, and then walk away. Tell them, it's like, hey, it was a foot fault because you stepped on your mini, and like it really looked like the disc was still in your hand when you rotated onto your mini. So if you're going to call violations, provide feedback. And if you're not going to call violations because it's too close, then help them understand that they might be getting close to making one. And I think
what if you're the person being called on? How do you handle it? And you're like, no, I wasn't there. It was just when my foot.
You have to be okay. Yeah. You have to be okay with people making the call. It's the rules. Yeah. There are, because it can spiral out of control really fast and you can't get really mad about it. I remember at, USDGC Monday qualifying, I had a person on my card call me for a foot fault. And this was, I think, at the time where I got to rethrow, but I don't think it didn't help me because I think I parked the shot that I threw originally and it didn't feel like I foot faulted, but I was like, so what I said, I looked at it and I was like, so they were like, yeah, dude, that was a foot fault. I was like, okay. So So here's what happens. I have to throw again. And I think that that's how we have to look at it is like, you just have to be like, all right, you are an official. You are making these calls. You understand the rules. Okay.
Yeah.
Because if you start to go down that hole, it's just going to take you to a dark place and pull you more and more off your game where, you know, accepting those moments, it's like being accepting of when you throw a putt and it hits the cage and rolls. It's like, well, yeah, you can just be mad, but right. At the same time, just accept that it happened and go try and be good from that next spot. It's like, yeah, that sucked. Nobody likes that happens. Nobody likes getting called on a foot fault. Nobody likes getting called on a time violation. Nobody likes throwing it OB. Nobody likes these things. But what are you going to do from there? Keep playing or quit?
Right.
You're going to keep playing.
Very true, sir. Very true. All right. That's all the time we have, right? This episode. That's all the questions we have. Appreciate you guys sending those questions. And we're going to work our hardest to make sure we are more regular on these shows. So we should be back.
I'm free next week. So,
all right. Yes. So we should be good to go next week. What is next
week? And then the following week will also be decent.
Yeah, the 19th and 26th.
No, we'll see. Maybe we'll do it after
US. I'll be in Emporia. We'll I'll be in Emporia on the 26th. So I'll have to take my equipment with me. Yeah, I gotta go.
Well, we can see. We can figure it out. We'll talk before then.
Yeah,
I think the people want it, and make sure you guys all share this around. We still need to. Did we choose a bag winner?
We have not chosen a bag winner. We need to choose a bag.
Yeah, well, we still have said bag. Somebody is going to get a bag, and it's going to be sweet. So that's a win.
All right, you guys have a good evening, and we'll see you on the next show. Appreciate you.
Take care, everybody.